Oh, welcome back, everybody, to Hoops HD. Here we are, April 20th, just about 2 weeks exactly since we watched the national championship game. And
we're at Barn Burner.
I don't know. It's 4:20. I've been stoned all day.
Welcome back to quarantine version of HoopsHD.com. I'm Chad Sherwood up here. We've got David Griggs to one side of me. Zach is here. And also from UDPride.com, we have Chris Ryman on, correct? I pronounced your name correctly. I apologize.
Reiman.
I apologize. Special guest tonight, Chris Reiman. We're going to talk a little Dayton Flyers. We're going to talk about how everyone's doing. Why don't we start with that, though? And Chris, it's your guest. Why don't I start with you? How are you doing, given what's going on in the world right now?
Well, I've kind of just blown through the five stages of grief and have pretty much come to the acceptance stage of everything. There's not a whole lot I can do about it now. I know a lot of Flyer fans out there are sort of still in the denial stage, or maybe the bargaining stage of it, to try to figure out a way to get an NCAA tournament played that's never going to get played. But the only way that I really found that I could cope with things was to basically just step as far away from it as possible and just do other things and keep my mind off of it, because the more I started thinking about it, the worse it got. So I actually took a few days hiatus from UD Pride and just did other things, did some yard work, worked on other tasks. And that seemed to be the solution for me. But there are a lot of fans out there that are still struggling with the way that things ended this season.
Well, yeah, Chris. I got just to say, I personally am a Rutgers alum. So at least you have been in the tournament the last 25 years, and we were on our way to our first tournament berth since 1991. But David, I'm sorry, I cut you off.
Well, yeah, I was just going to say, like, one of the things we wanted to do, and I know that this is not at all enough of a consolation, but in the year that Dayton had, pretty much all the way from November on, it was a special year. They were one of the better storylines, and we were talking some on air, but probably more off air, about how good we thought that would be for the game. For those of you, I think everybody that watches this knows about Dayton, but I don't know what else to compare their program and fan base to other than like Metallica in the early to mid 80s. Like, it's this like team with this really big, passionate following. But if you're not one of the followers, you may not be that familiar with them. 12,000 people for bye games, outdrawing really what most Power Five conferences do, but not, no offense, Chris, not a real blue-blooded or storied history. But to see them have the kind of year that they've had and to see those loyal fans have it, we thought, this is the kind of team that the country's going to fall in love with. What a storyline for the tournament. They weren't the only one, but they were probably the biggest one. And if anybody really deserves the kind of year that they're having, it's them. And we kind of hated it for everyone, but particularly for Dayton. That's why we kind of invited Zach here too, because of how it had to end. Now, again, this isn't enough of a consolation, but I hope that they get the spotlight and some recognition, and that despite not getting the tournament, that it does open some doors. We'll get more into Dayton's program in a minute, but they are a really, again, unique kind of case in college basketball with the resources and the support that they have. It is way more than what you typically see out of the rest of the Atlantic 10. The kinds of coaches that have come through there, Oliver Purnell, while he never won a tournament game, he did earn a protected seed while he's at Dayton, never came close to equaling that. Brian Gregory never came close to making tournaments and winning tournament games anywhere else he's been. Archie Miller, while he's not done at Indiana yet, has not been to four straight tournaments and an Elite Eight, and I wouldn't be surprised if he doesn't come close to that. So this is sort of a sleeping giant out there. And I know a lot of people, our viewers, know about them, but if you don't, this is the kind of program that once they get the right coach and the right support, which I think they have now, they might be a top 25 regular pretty consistently moving forward.
Well, I hope that's the case. I mean, we've been waiting 50 years for this season. I mean, literally. I mean, I've got fans that I've known their entire lives. This was when you're a Dayton fan, it's always wait till next year. And that's just the way it's always been. I mean, you've talked about that passionate fan base. And it's because Dayton basketball is like the franchise team in town. There's no professional sports team. There's nothing really to compete with it. So it's the thing to do in November through March. And so every year you go into the season thinking this is going to be that year where all the stars align, everything works out perfectly, and we finally arrive. And the great thing about this year was, you, and you guys are smart enough to know this too because you follow UD, you hear this every year from Flyer fans because we're eternal optimists. And sometimes we kind of talk out of our rear ends about how good we think we are or going to be.
You could say asses. This is, yeah.
Yeah. We actually had empirical evidence this year that we were great. And it wasn't just us, you know, saying it. It was third party saying, you know what? You might be one of the top three or four teams in the country. You could win a national championship. You actually do have the best player in college basketball. It's not just you telling yourselves that you do. You really do. And so I think for Dayton fans, it, that affirmation of feeling like, okay, others are now recognizing us for the things that we're doing here, and maybe it's about 25 or 30 years too late, but better late than never. And so everything was just, you know, it was just a confluence of things that was going on from late November after Maui into January when we got on a 20-game winning streak. It just felt like, man, if we really play our best, and maybe if we don't see Kansas again till the national championship game, our best might be as good or better than everybody else's best. And this is the year that it's going to happen for us. And so all those dreams that you had for 20 or 30 years, you know, I was going to bed at night thinking, oh my God, what if we actually go to Atlanta? I mean, I've been thinking about that my entire life, and I was trying to just process that potential of that happening. And then to have the rug kind of pulled out from under you at the last minute was just heartbreaking for everybody. But, you know, no less for the coaches and the players. Those are the ones I feel for most because they're the ones that did all the work. But, you know, as a Rutgers fan too, you know, you've been waiting for this kind of a year for forever, basically. You know, the rack has been like it's never been before. And now, you know, teams like Rutgers and Dayton and some others, you know, this, a lot of things were happening this year, and there was a lot of parity going on too that I didn't think really any one team was sticking out too far ahead from everyone else. Kansas was really good. Gonzaga was really good. But Dayton was really good too. And we're just going to have to live with a 29-2 season and a Naismith Player of the Year as our calling card, because that's pretty much all that's left after the smoke is cleared.
Yeah. Chris, something I mentioned earlier is, and maybe the internal optimism almost worked as a detriment, because when you look at Dayton and you look at the facilities and the resources and the support and the ratings, most people don't understand, like, TV ratings in Dayton, it's just, it's not the size of New York City, but it is a relevant market that college basketball rates high in. They supported the first four. They supported the opening round game. I guess they called it the play-in game before that. I mean, this is a little part of the world that even a lot of college basketball fans in other parts of the country probably don't realize how big basketball is in Dayton. But with all of that, you know, it seemed like that the success that they should be, that they were having, didn't equal or come close to equaling what the ceiling could be. And in the last three or four years, I mean, minus, I guess, the last year where it was sort of a building year, you were starting to see that. Now, this year was the extreme exception, a top five team, but I don't see any reason why this shouldn't be a team that isn't a top 25 regular and a team that's regularly not just in the NCAA tournament, but in on the first ballot and wearing white, so to speak, in the first round. Like, what were some of the things that took that a while to keep going? Because as good as I think Archie Miller was, I don't think he's going to do what he did at Dayton. And no one else that moved on from Dayton has come close to equaling the success that they had when they were with the Flyers.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, too. I think what that says more than anything, when you look at Gregory and Purnell and his other coaches that have, you know, Archie Miller, you know, he's still got some work to do at Indiana, but it just shows you that the resources and the pieces in place at Dayton are really there to do great things, maybe even easier than some of those other power schools that coaches kind of aspire to. You've got some other things going on in Dayton where you're the only show in town. You don't have to compete with football. You don't have to compete with anything else. The spotlight's on you, and every game when you come out is going to be 13,000 fans in the stands. And I think when you talked about the first four, I think a lot of what happens in the first four and in the success of the playing game, the first four in Dayton, is a byproduct of how people feel about the Dayton program, because the Dayton fans have always sort of felt like the Flyer program is that program that just doesn't get the recognition maybe it deserves. It's an underdog mentality out of Dayton. It's a blue collar town. And so when those, 15, 16 seeds come in and play in Dayton, the fans rally behind those schools. And then, so when they come and see a 16 play a 16, it's like, there's a little bit of you and us as well. And we know how you feel to be marginalized a lot and to be cast aside as not as important, but you are important. And that's why we're here to support you. And so I think a lot of those things cross-pollinate one another in Dayton. And, you talked about, some of the teams in the recent past. I think a lot of it's, I don't care how good of a coach you are, it still comes down to players making plays. And if you look at the last four or five NCAA tournament level teams that Dayton has had, whether you're talking teams with Jordan Seibert, obviously this was a team that was NCAA team. So you got Jalen Crutcher, OB, Ibby. I mean, there's a whole bunch of really good players there that I don't think Dayton had in the past. And not just good players, but players that know how to make the big plays and the big moments. And that's what Dayton, I think, was missing until about 2010, 2011. Archie came in and sort of changed that culture a bit and was able to get some of those different difference makers that can make a play in the last 30 seconds. That's what we didn't have. And so we had just heartbreaking loss after heartbreaking loss for like 20 years to Xavier and all kinds of other programs where we had teams on the ropes and we couldn't close the deal. And when B. Sanford made that shot against Ohio State in the NCAA tournament, I think that was a change in posture for the program. Now, whether we can keep that going remains to be seen because you still have to recruit. And so I think Dayton's biggest challenge right now is moving up a level and recruiting in a different pond than they have in the past to get those type of players consistently.
Zach, are you on with us?
Yeah, I am. I've been on. Dave mentioned Chris wanting to have me on for this discussion because I don't want to be maudlin about it, but throughout all of this, as awful as this is, and I'm sure you're aware there's real life reasons why this happened that matter, but in terms of the impact of this, I feel bad for Chad and Rutgers and a lot of programs, but I have said, if I were you, man, if I was a Dayton fan, I would just have wandered into a river. I'm just devastated for the Dayton fan base for basically all the reasons. I haven't said much because David's basically outlined my thoughts. It's a great fan base. It's a really, really good program. And this was the year, and it was obviously, it's different because one thing to mention is while Dayton's had single-digit seeds, Chris, as you know, they've had flameouts of the first round with those single digits. This was the first time Dayton was definitely going to have the best player on the floor, no matter basically who they played. You mentioned don't want to face Kansas again. Well, it's not like Kansas blew you out. It's devastating, but at the same time, it's a program that you can say it's different there because that support is going to be there going forward. But the shame is obviously, the kind of team won't be. The one question I guess I had for you, Chris, after just making this really depressing, and I'm sorry about that, is what are your thoughts on the fact that I'm sure you've thought about, is it almost better that you didn't get a bracket and then have this happen? They didn't do here's what the bracket would have been because it reduces the what ifs, or does part of you wish you had gotten to at least see what the bracket would have been?
The bracket is not as concerning to me as just the ability to play in the bracket, because I think that's what all the Dayton fans were looking forward to. I mean, I think we felt like as long as we didn't do anything really stupid in the Atlantic 10 tournament, we got maybe to the finals, we may have locked up a number one seed. So just getting to, and I've said this before on our, in our discussion forums and some articles I've written, that really seeding only really matters in the first round. I mean, of real importance. I mean, when you're a one seed, you pretty much get a pass unless you're Virginia to get past that first round. But once you get past the first round, even if you're a 3 or 4 seed, and you're playing a, you could be playing a, you know, a 13 or whatever. The difference between a 4 seed and a 13 anymore really is not that much. The 4 seeds are those 3rd or 4th place teams in a power conference, and that 13 team might be the best team out of a small conference. But you get them on a neutral court and they play one another, seeding is really not all that important. And it really comes down to matchups. So not having seen the bracket, and I'm really glad they probably didn't come out with a bracket, because I don't think it would have been fair to the teams that didn't play their conference tournaments, which was almost everybody.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, having, you know, just looking back on the last 3 or 4 weeks, knowing that you had a potential number one seed waiting for you, you had the Naismith National Player of the Year waiting for you. You had a 20-game winning streak riding into the tournament. Everything was coming together at the right time. And the beautiful thing was, and this might answer Dave's question about, you know, Obi. It wasn't just Obi, and that was the great thing about it. When Obi was on the bench sitting, Dayton was still an NCAA tournament team. He could have not played the entire year, and the way the rest of the team played, they still would have made the tournament. Now, he's the player that gets you to a number one seed, and you have to have an Obi type player on your team to win a national championship. If you look at every NCAA tournament championship team probably the last 20 years, they've had a serious clutch player. I mean, whether it's Brunson or any of those other guys that have, you know, they're just playmakers. So you have to have one or two of those. But it was nice knowing that if Obi got in foul trouble and had to sit for 5 or 10 minutes, the wheels were not going to come off. And that was pretty much what happened all year. You know, everyone tried to stop Obi. But the great thing about Obi was, even as a post player, he had almost as many assists as turnovers, which is crazy for an interior 4 or 5 guy. Most 4 or 5 guys have quadruple or quintuple the number of turnovers that they have compared to assists. And so if you tried to double Obi, Obi was smart enough to always find the open player. So it's all those things that we were looking forward to, knowing we had on this team that we didn't have from other teams that we weren't going to get to see in the NCAA tournament. And I just hope that for those listening out there who aren't familiar with Dayton, that they don't think that because the tournament wasn't played, that Dayton really wasn't good enough to compete in for a national championship anyway. I hope that's not the case, because if we had played, I think we would have shown ourselves certainly capable of doing that. But not having played, I hope that's not an excuse for everyone else to sort of just throw the season aside, say, well, you're just a one-off season, you're a one-hit wonder, and that's going to be the end of you. You wouldn't have got past the third round.
Well, Chris, on that note, though, let me ask you. I mean, obviously you have you're right in tune with everything that's going on with Dayton basketball. When we do get back to play finally, hopefully come this coming November, and then going to next season, you know, what does this Dayton team look like at the moment?
I mean, when you lose a player like Obi Toppin, mm-hmm. a player that Dayton, and now here's another difference too. When you're at Kansas or Kentucky, you lose an Obi Toppin. Well, next year you just recruit another one. It's not a big deal. You might recruit 2 of them.
Yeah.
At Dayton, we will never see an Obi Toppin again, ever, ever.
Yeah, I didn't want to say that, but that was.
Now we might recruit a really, really good player that might make, I don't know, maybe in 5 or 10 years, third team All-American, but we will never see a player that could dominate like he did. Having said that, even losing him and Ryan Mikesell and Trey Landers, the core is still pretty good. I mean, we had Ibby Watson coming off the bench, who is as good. He could have started easily. So he'll move in to the starting lineup. As long as Jalen Crutcher comes back, he's testing the NBA waters now, but with the NBA right now, who even knows where that's going, but he should probably be back. So I would say that Dayton's probably still an NCAA caliber tournament team. We've got some guys that have been redshirting sitting out. We've got some decent recruits coming in. There'll be some work to do. It's probably not going to have the kind of upside that this team had, But in some ways, I think and Dayton fans have always been like this. They'll rally behind the team that's in front of them, no matter whether they're 4-26 or they're 29-2, and they'll get behind the guys next year and pull them along as far as they possibly can to try to maximize their talents.
Yeah, Chris, to that end, to try and be positive, since I'm the don't want to be the guy just going, man, this really stinks for you, huh? Because, yeah, you're pretty aware of that. In trying to be positive, that this awful situation, what it has allowed is usually the way this sort of thing works is, and I think Dayton was absolutely a legitimate national championship contender. I'm a UConn fan. I was all about to jump on the bandwagon in the tournament, pro Dayton and everything. They are absolutely not a flash in the pan, legit top three team, in my opinion. But if they had a deep run, the sort of thing we've seen with so-called mid-majors is then, you know, not just losing Obi Toppin, and you lose the coach, it's hard to players. Well, this is a situation where I think stability is going to be over the overwhelming consistency across a very unstable situation. I mean, Grant's not going anywhere. You bring back a lot of the team. And trying to be positive, is there that to look at that while I think Dayton could have matched what Minnesota's going to come in. Who wants to – I'd much rather be the coach at Dayton than the coach at Minnesota. I know money is obviously a huge difference. But
yeah, I think having
– I think Dayton can really get some stability as much as it sucks right now.
Yeah, it's, to me, Anthony Grant's the key to that whole thing, because if you looked at Archie Miller's run, and he had a great run here, but everybody here knew that Archie Miller was not going to be here forever. This was a place to get him to another place. And, you know, it would probably take a top 5 or 10 program to offer him a job to do that. But we knew that he had higher aspirations than Dave. And that's fine. I mean, that's okay. We understood that going in. And we understood that when Oliver Purnell came in, he was a rebuilder of programs, but he wasn't going to be here forever. Probably the same with Brian Gregory. But Grant, I think there's some feeling around town that this is the job for him. This is the fit for him. And he's not really looking to, you know, be that coach at a top 5 program. This is his alma mater. This is where he's comfortable with. He's got people surrounding him that he's comfortable with and are familiar with. And so I think there's the potential there for some long-term stability. And maybe that'll help in recruiting a bit as well, where recruits will know that the guy is, you know, he's looking for some long-term roots there. So, it's easy to say that now when 2.5 years ago, when after Archie leaves, we have a year and a half, 2 years, where we're kind of struggling a little bit to rebuild things. We had a bunch of players leave, transfer out. Yep. And so there are some question marks as to, you know, whether, hey, is Anthony Grant really the right coach for the job? And there were, you know, a number of fans that were questioning that. And To athletic director Neil Sullivan's credit, he said, you know, to counter those claims that, well, Anthony just got the job because he's a UD grad. Well, he said, listen, that will last for the first 15 minutes of the conversation. And then after that, Anthony Grant's going to be judged by everybody on wins and losses. And that's pretty much how it's played out. And so he just needed a couple of years to come in and get his style of players in that were good fits for him. And also, to his credit, it sounded like in talking to his friend Billy Donovan that he kind of changed his style a little bit from how he was coaching at Alabama, from a more defensive style to more offensive-oriented style.
He definitely did.
I feel like he had the light go on where he was like, oh, this is way more fun.
Yeah.
I think that Alabama experience helps a lot in that. I thought it was crazy when he got let go by Alabama. So he made them
a lot better. Everybody says he was sort of a bust at Alabama. They were way better when he was there than they ever were before he got there. Yeah. Well, maybe not ever were, but
I think where it helps Dayton is that he's done the move where you take the big money move in a difficult to win program in a big conference, and he's done well at it, and it still wasn't enough. So I think for him, Chris, it's just like you said, stay at Dayton. You're the biggest guy in a very supportive program that will provide you everything you need. Great fan base. I haven't looked. I'm pretty certain Dayton averages more fans at their games than Alabama did. So I mean, it's what do you define as a bigger program? Obviously, Alabama's got all the SEC money, but Dayton's a bigger basketball program before this year. It's not a question in my mind. And so I think that experience and it going wrong, actually, it when it didn't really go wrong, will help Dayton. Because, what I mean, unless Duke or, you know, Kentucky come calling, why leave? And if Chris, if Duke or Kentucky come calling, that you've had a pretty good run. And even then, you know, you almost got to be happy. It's like, it's, I want to have these sort of problems. So
that's kind of how I feel about it when Archie left. You know, it's a good problem to have when they're replacing a coach that goes to Indiana. So I can deal with those kind of problems. And to your point about Anthony, you know, having sort of done that big coaching gig at Alabama, gotten it out of the system. Well, I'm pretty certain that Archie did not leave for Indiana because of money. I mean, I haven't been given numbers, but from what I've read, the numbers that Dayton has thrown out to try to compensate Archie when he was here was on par with pretty much, you know, any decent gig you were going to get out of the Big Ten. And so I don't think Anthony would leave for money. I don't think Brian Gregory left for money. Dayton will pay you what you're worth to the point where money will not be the factor in why you leave. You may leave for other very legitimate reasons that Dayton just can't compensate you for, potentially being in a different type of conference where you can, you know, go four games under 500 in your conference and still be in contention for an at-large bid. Dayton can't offer you that in the Atlantic 10. But they can pay you, you know, $2-2.5 million a year at a private university to coach basketball. And it's a pretty good gig considering you can get paid the same amount of money or more at a place like Indiana, make a couple Sweet 16s in a row and get fired. That won't happen at Dayton.
Yeah.
I always had the point of view the whole time that Archie wasn't leaving for the Big Ten. Archie was leaving for Indiana. It was either there or maybe Ohio State, which wasn't going to happen. I didn't feel like he was leaving for anywhere else. And, you know, so that's the situation. Yeah, you've got to, you know, the right mindset. It's Indiana. Chad, I don't know if you had something. I had another just kind of.
Yeah, go ahead.
Chris, it goes back to kind of obviously a lost chance for Dayton and all that, but what an opportunity it was for their league. And just, Chris, I guess, where do you see the Atlantic 10 kind of going forward? I saw John Rothstein mentioning that they're considering, as many conferences have, expanding to the 20-game conference schedule. Do you think – oh, God.
Let me comment after this answer, regardless of what it is.
No, I didn't really have a thought either way. I just kind of wanted Chris's thoughts on that scheduling-wise for the A-10. And even if it's a different answer for Dayton versus Rhode Island, which it may be.
Well, I'll answer the scheduling question first, and then I'll talk about the A-10. So for scheduling, for you know, just speaking from Dayton's point of view, Dayton plays, you know, we play 18-game conference schedule right now. Dayton already plays in their pod, which is like five games where you play, you know, the same team twice. We already play the top teams in the A-10 twice. So going to a 20-game conference schedule doesn't offer Dayton anything except maybe the privilege of playing Fordham and LaSalle twice. And doing so means at least one of those would be on the road.
Right.
So, you know, that doesn't really do anything for Dayton. Now, it might be great for Fordham, but are we making these scheduling decisions to bring the bottom up or make the top better? And as scheduling across the country gets tougher and tougher to do, as all these other conferences go to 20 games, what's happening is the number of opportunities to play, say Dayton, to play Purdue in a non-conference, I don't know, home and home series, or even a neutral game series, say in Indianapolis, are getting so finite that you've got the same number of teams like Dayton and BYU and East Tennessee State and Wofford and all these other pretty decent schools that play basketball trying to fight over a smaller number of games from the power conference schools. And quite frankly, when you look at the power conference schedules and UD's AD has sent me spreadsheets on this galore, and we talked about it. I think we looked at Florida State. I think they had one game on their schedule this year that was actually a game in which they had to go out and schedule somebody. When you took their conference schedule out of the mix, you took conference challenges game, those games out of the mix, Gavitt games, a local rivalry game, maybe Florida State plays Florida every year. You take all those things into account. They had like one or two open dates that they could possibly play anybody away from their arena in the non-conference schedule. And if they're going to play a non-conference game, well, they're not going to first ask Dayton. they'll first ask, you know, Kentucky or somebody else. So the number of games that you can go out and try to get are becoming very, very small. So I understand the A-10. I understand their feeling of like, we've got to do something. But my worry is they're going to do it to the detriment of the teams that matter most in the A-10. And so from my perspective in scheduling, it's not Dayton's job to make the bottom of the A-10 better. It's the bottom of the A-10's job to make the bottom of the A-10 better.
Yeah, well, as a New York native, let me tell you something. Let me be the 5,000th person to tell you, Chris, no, Fordham, it's going to happen. They're going to finally get things going.
Are they going to finally finish in the top 200?
But by what, canceling basketball?
Yeah.
Go ahead, David, you had a comment.
Expanded schedule idea.
Yeah, anyway, what I look like the Atlantic 10, and you guys have kind of covered it already, it sort of falls into this category of multi-bid non-power conference, and I think the American, the Mountain West, usually anyways, and the West Coast also kind of fall into that, and they're all facing similar issues. Like, the Atlantic 10 really is there's 10 basketball-centric conferences that don't play football of any kind, and the Atlantic 10 outside of the Big East is probably the strongest. It's certainly in the biggest markets. It's in the game's best interest for the Atlantic 10 to be strong. But at the same time, like Chris said, they're kind of frozen out of these out-of-conference showcase games, because when you look at any Power 5 schedule, they play bye games. They play showcase games that are put together by third-party schedulers, such as conference challenges or exempt tournaments or something like that, and then there might be room left for one or two of them. What about this idea, a scheduling agreement, a rather unique one, between those four, the West Coast, the Mountain West, the American, and the Atlantic 10, where at the end of the season, you basically get in groups of four based on where you finished, and you play each other. The teams that Dayton would have played would have been San Diego State, Gonzaga, and I think Houston. Yes, I'd like to see that. I think that would solve a lot of people's problems. And, you know, at the bottom, you'd get some garbage, but the second tier would have been BYU, Utah State. That's some fun Beehive action. I'd watch that. Rhodey, and I'm losing it, Wichita State, I guess. You're essentially creating the kinds of games that you need to be playing to impress the committee, and you're creating showcase games for the conference, and you're doing it late in the year, which is when you need to have it. If I were king for a day, I would set all those four conferences down and try and kind of create in the aggregate what you can't create with the A-10, like you said, because there's only so many teams in the league that you can play.
And God help Chris if that led to a Cincinnati-Dayton game.
Well, I think it's a good idea. And I know the UD Athletic Department has actually tried to put something like that together, maybe not necessarily at the end of the season, but just sort of get a coalition of the willing together, so to speak, of like-minded schools that are not in the power conferences that are 20, 25 game winners a year, maybe six or eight of them, and say, hey, let's figure out a way to band together. If no one else is going to play us, let's play three or four games a year out of the six or eight teams that we have and round robin one another and try to build some equity among ourselves. Mm-hmm. Now, it's great on paper, but you know, every time I go back to the athletic department and ask them about that, or ask the athletic director, you know, I say, how's it going? You know, you would think it would be something that everyone would just be jumping for. And the answer I usually get is they don't get it. They don't listen. I know Dayton tried to get a game with Utah State this past year, and it, you know, it looked good for a while, and Utah State eventually said, no, we don't want to play. So if Dayton can't get Utah State, who are you going to get? We tried to get DePaul. DePaul was going to play us. Everything was looking good. And it went through a different channel at the university and didn't happen. So, I think we need to be flexible with schedule. I'm open to any good idea. I don't care how off the wall it is, as long as it works. The issue with the A-10 is, I'll go back to the A-10 for just a second, is unlike any other top 10 conference in the country, the A-10 is really two conferences in one. You've got teams that take basketball seriously, and then you've got teams that pretty much don't give a damn. And that's just the bottom line. That's the way it is. That's the way it's been for 25 years. There's empirical evidence on it. Mm-hmm. We can go back to Fordham and talk about a few other teams.
Yeah.
But if they were serious, they would have had at least two or three seasons in the last 25 years where they would have made a few NITs or an NCAA tournament or something. I mean, even God forbid – LaSalle made a Sweet 16. So everyone's excuse is completely out the door. And so when Dayton is pigeonholed into the Atlantic 10, and I don't want to say, you know, the Atlantic 10 has been great for Dayton. They salvaged us when all we had to sell was our name back in the mid-90s when they took us in. So I am so grateful for the A-10. But the A-10 should be grateful for Dayton too. Dayton has done a lot for the conference. And the issue with the A-10 is after you get past those top six or seven teams in the conference, the drop-off is just huge. And even if you look at, you know, the SEC or the AAC, their bottom three or four teams are not, you know, 225 or 250 below in the net of the RPI. They're just, they're metric killers. That's what they are. And so you don't want to play those teams twice, let alone once, but you got to play them once. And so for Dayton, they're in this, you know, kind of weird situation where the conference helps them somewhat, and they try to mitigate that with those pods to get in the best pod to play, you know, VCU, Rhodey, St. Louis, Davidson. They want to play those teams twice and avoid the other ones. And the A-10 has been, to their credit, has been good to try to listen to the Daytons and VCUs and package those schedules together to try to help them. But when you go out of conference and try to play, you're just that much further behind because you know you can't make it up in the conference schedule in January, knowing of your final, I don't know, nine games you have to play, four or five of them aren't really going to help you. Now this year, to the A-10's credit, the A-10 was pretty good this year. They had a pretty good non-conference season. So going down the stretch, even if Dayton had been a bubble team, if they kept winning, I think they would have been fine. Now it didn't matter this year. They were already preordained to be probably a number one seed if they just kept winning. But too many seasons, the A-10's gone into the conference season with like a 550 winning percentage in the non-con, and that's just unacceptable. You've got to be closer to 700. And as Neil, the UD athletic director, tells me, the A-10 teams want to schedule, or should schedule, the absolute toughest schedule, non-conference schedule that they can play and still win 70% of those games. Now, whatever, however soft or hard that schedule is, you know, be that as it may, but you've got to win 70% of those games to make the conference season something meaningful that the other top conferences take advantage of during the, you know, the last 2 months of the season.
And, you know, which kind of brings me back to like a little old school A-10 here, but when John Chaney had Temple in there, that's the way he scheduled. And those teams were always right there in the tournament discussion, even if they weren't the best overall record among the A-10.
He never played any bye games. I don't think they ever played one. He swore he never would.
Yeah, the thing I've noticed just from the A-10 versus a lot of that level of leagues more so is just the wild swings the programs take, the ones that are taking it seriously. You know, Rhode Island in the 90s, the great run, and then they're in the Wilderness for 20 years, and they do well under Dan Hurley, and then Dan Hurley leaves, and now they've got everybody transferring out of the program, and LaSalle blip Sweet 16. It's just so wild, sweet. I mean, St. Joe's the last 20 years. I don't know, Chris, do you have a handle on why? I mean, there are a lot of other, like, coaches successful in the Mountain West and the American and everything that was the American and the Colonial where guys leave, but the programs seem to still be around the same level. What is it about – is there something about the A-10 where these programs just take these wild swings?
I you know, that's a really good point. You know, GW is in this, as well. I mean, they used to be a bell cow in the A-10, and you know, now they're near the bottom. And so, yeah, I think a lot of it is, you know, you got to have, you know, some decent coaching and decent recruiting. And when Carl Hobbs was there at GW, he recruited well.
I mean, you're talking to a UConn guy. You don't have to tell me how good Carl Hobbs is. We're all carrying that water.
I think, you know, some of it is coaching. You've obviously got to recruit. But I think, too, you know, going back to the point I made that the A-10 is really two conferences in one, if you look at all those other top 10 conferences, too, they don't have anywhere close to the disparity in facilities and resources that the A-10 had from top to bottom. And you got Dayton at the top playing in a 13,500-seat facility that charters to every single away game and has every accoutrement known to man. Then at the bottom, you got a school playing in a 1,800 to 2,000 seat, 120-year-old facility that hasn't made the postseason, you know, I don't know, 28 of the last 30 years and probably won't in 28 of the next 30 years. So how can you possibly match those teams together in a way where they can constantly complement one another? And so we can talk about Dayton managing that and doing as well as they can in the A-10. But at the same time, is it really fair to those other schools at the bottom of the A-10 who are constantly being asked to go out and play against St. Louis, who's got a great facility and good fan base, or Dayton or VCU, when they just don't have the resources to do so, or maybe they don't even have the will to do so, and it might be something even above the coaching staff at the basketball program level. It could be administratively they just don't have the will to do it, and they could be just saying to themselves, you know what, we really haven't done a whole lot of anything for the last 25 years. Everyone else has sort of lifted the log. We've just sort of put our hands on it. And as long as nobody calls us out on it, we still get credit for lifting the log. So we'll just keep doing the same thing until someone decides to put some constraints on us and tells us we need to either shape up or ship out. And so, A-10 contract a little bit. Some A-10 fans probably won't like hearing that, or fans of other programs. But I think the experiment, in some sense, has run its course, and there needs to be some accountability, especially since in the last 10 or 15 years, the entire landscape of college basketball has completely changed. This is not the same landscape it was when Dayton came into the A-10 25 years ago. And so I think we need to do some things to change alongside with it. And if that means it's like a program like Fordham or LaSalle or whomever, maybe you're a better fit in another conference where they can actually have their student athletes succeed and experience March Madness on a semi-consistent basis, I would think that would be advantageous for them as well. I'm not trying to punish them. I actually want them to do better and feel the success at the end of March, rather than knowing that first round game in the A-10 in March is always the last game of the season for them.
Yeah. And one league that naturally I think of, cause you mentioned it, and having seen UConn's leaving cause they're going to the Big East, but I've seen, it was wild being in a league in which you had, you know, Memphis and Tulane, if you want to talk about disparity and resources. But the other side of this is
Tulane has Ron Hunter. They've got a resource.
They do now. but and he did a good job there. Yeah, if you can just get 10 transfers a year, maybe eventually it works. Another thing I'm wondering about, rather, is, you know, what's the American going to do? Has there been a talk, I'm sure, Chris, about, I think a move, if I'm the American, I think they need to shore up basketball-wise. I think they would look at VCU or maybe a Dayton. Is that something that, while, I mean, it's tough because the AAC was not appealing to me, but that's because I was used to playing all the Big East teams. For Dayton, I mean, I'm not going to pretend there aren't dregs in the American, but it's kind of the high is higher and the low is the same kind of low. Is that something that I'm sure that's discussed on what you do with the Dayton fans?
Yeah, there's been a lot of talk about conference realignment probably the last 5 to 10 years. And, you know, in a perfect world, Dayton would have been one of those schools that got into the Big East. But we kind of had that Archie Miller run about 3 or 4 years too late. And I think if we had done that, we probably would have been in better consideration. Now there's other politics and all this other stuff with it as well. So,
Butler hired their president from Villanova, I think with the sole intent of getting into that league. And is it Marquette, or I'm sorry, Creighton, their president was on Marquette's board. So two of the three spots were already sewn up pretty much.
Yeah. So, that would have been a perfect case scenario. It didn't happen, but I think the hesitation for a school like Dayton is, number one, if Dayton does something, they have to sort of insulate themselves in whatever they do, which means if Dayton leaves the A-10, that probably means a couple of other schools are thinking about it as well, St. Louis, a VCU. And so do you band together and all do the same thing at the same time, or do you all go your separate way? So let's say let's take the first scenario, and it's just Dayton saying, okay, we're out of here. We're going somewhere else. We're tired of you guys. Well, you go to the AAC, but, you know, you're trading some strengths and some weaknesses for one another. Now you may have a higher top end of the conference. The low might be a little bit higher, but now you've got all kinds of geographical constraints that you have to deal with. You've got student athletes you have to worry about. You're sending, you know, your student athletes to, you know, far away states, much further away than you can get to in the A-10 probably. And I know there's flights, you know, the detractors will say, well, you know, you can get a flight to Dallas and it's not that much different than getting a flight to Richmond or something like that. But the truth of the matter is a lot of sports still bus to their away games. Yeah. It's not just basketball. So you've got baseball teams from Dayton that are bussing it to Davidson and back. And so you have to take all these things into consideration. It's not a decision that you make in a vacuum. And for a school like Dayton, if they want to go to another conference, are you making that move as an interim solution to a long-term problem, hoping that you just make another jump in a few years? Or is it something that you're looking to make a 20-year decision on? And I think for Dayton, they don't want to do that interim jump. They don't want to be somewhere where they leave the A-10 and then go somewhere in 2 or 3 years. I'm not talking about you, Butler. But
Butler left before they even got there.
That was pretty amazing.
So moving to the, I don't see Dayton moving to the American as like this next 20-year long solution. I don't know what the next 20 years will look like. I think some of these teams really ought to come together, the Daytons and VCUs and St. Louis's and Wofford's and some of these other schools, ought to come in and maybe thinking about collectively creating another conference or something like that, maybe the Wichita States and something. I know there's some geography and there's politics involved in that, but the problem isn't getting any better by ignoring the fact that schools like yourself are getting left out of the equation. Now, in the challenges, and I said this earlier, is getting those other schools to understand those challenges. And that's where Dayton has had the most difficulties, getting those Utah States and those other schools that are like Dayton to play us to understand that the metrics are working against you. Yeah. And it took forever to get this is how bad it got. Some of you may know this, but when Dayton had a home-and-home series with St. Mary's
College. Oh, this is a fantastic story.
Dayton went to St. Mary's and said, hey, let's play. It'd be a great game because this was when St. Mary's was like 27-3 or something. They were like the first team left out of the NCAA tournament because they didn't play anybody.
Yeah.
You know? So we go to St. Mary's and say, listen, this game is right up your alley. It's going to solve your problem. We're the metrics experts on this. You need us as much as we need you. It makes perfect sense. We're both private schools. Let's play one another. So they thought about it and said, no, we don't want to play. It's just not a good fit. And we're like, what do you mean it's not a good fit? How can it possibly not be a good fit? So we go back to them again, and finally they said, well, okay, we'll play, but you have to buy our game out here in Moraga to play us. So Dayton had to buy St. Mary's to play at St. Mary's in order to get St. Mary's to then eventually play back at Dayton. That's how bad it got. And Neil Sullivan, the AD, I mean, he was pretty forthright about it. Said, listen, I have to put my ego out of this. It really hurt to do that, you know, from an athletic director standpoint, but I have to do what's best for Dayton. And sometimes I have to swallow my own pride and make those things and write a check in order to get the job done. And so we made that happen. And then, of course, we played St. Mary's again out this year out in Arizona. So maybe St. Mary's is coming around a little bit. Maybe Bennett is finally, you know, getting on with the program here, so to speak, as far as scheduling is concerned. So they don't get left out of the tournament so often.
Yeah.
But it's that challenge with those other schools, just like St. Mary's, that you give them the same story and you show them the same metrics and the spreadsheets and the graphs and the flow charts and everything, saying, if you continue to do what you do, you will not be in the NCAA tournament. And they say, okay, I see what you brought me. It looks good. And then, you know, 2 weeks later, they'll call you and just say, it's just not a good fit.
Yeah. They're playing Southern Utah. No, I think the West Coast Conference is really coming along in terms of they got a media deal. I think the mid-level of that conference is skyrocketing up. I think that's going to maybe help in that regard, that St. Mary's doesn't feel as desperate to cling on to what little room they have to stand there. And, you know, I just hope that – I agree with you in the rising tide and the banding together theory. I really just want whatever leads to having Cincinnati and Dayton playing conference games again, because that's fun to me.
So that was the ulterior motive here.
I still, by the way, the one that still gets me of all this conference realignment, Davidson in the A-10 is still so weird to me. It's still, and they've done fine.
They've done well. I think they've been an asset to the conference.
I agree. It's just, it's weird, but that's because I remind myself that it's not just the Colonial whose geography makes no sense. It's working, but yeah, I do agree with Chris's point on the A-10 being just kind of too – and you also have the problem. I mean, I live near it. I mean, UMass doesn't know what kind of school they want to be. They've settled on hockey school now, but we'll get back to that.
Chris, I guess we're just about out of time, but just before we finish up here, for people that want to follow you more, the website is udpride.com, correct?
Yeah, that's it. They can come on, they can register, they can join the discussion. If they have problems discussing or registering, they can send me an email, chris@udpride.com. I'll get them registered and logged on, and they can put their 2 cents in and try to commiserate with the rest of the Flyer fans here over the spring and summer months here.
Yeah, it's kind of a cool site because it's an independent site. Like, you're the publisher. You're kind of like us in the sense that it's not part of some Rivals or Scout or 24/7 network. It's just UD fans.
That's the nice thing about it. So we can work as hard as we want and say what we want. We don't have anybody looking over our shoulder telling us what to do.
Yeah.
And Chris, hey, look at it this way. I mean, the other team I thought of a lot was San Diego State, but I mean, they lost their last game of the season. They were a disgrace.
Well, I want to leave you on a good note here, Chris. You know, every year there's one team that cuts down the nets after winning 6 games in a row. I just double checked. Dayton won their last 6 games. Therefore, they must have been the national champions, right?
Yeah. I mean, I'd be down for it. And they're going to be great again. It will, Chris, that one year, it'll be a year you don't expect it. There'll be a 12 seed. They'll probably have to play in Dayton somehow. That'll be the year. That's when you
get that. Yeah. All right. But I do want to thank everyone for joining us. Chris, again, thank you for joining us. And I'm going to encourage everyone to go on and check out the website. And also want to encourage, make sure that everybody stays safe and stays healthy out there. It's a scary time we're all going through, but I just wish you and your family all the best, Chris.
I appreciate that. Thanks for having me on.
All right. And thanks. And then also on behalf of David Griggs and Zach, I'm Chad Sherwood. And we'll be back again in probably in a few more weeks with another podcast. So stay tuned to the website. Thanks, everybody, for joining us.